The founders of America set up a constitutional republic where we would be governed by our elected representatives. But have recent efforts to fight the alleged threat of catastrophic, man-made global warming undermined our constitutional system in some ways? For example, there's such a push to curtail the use of fossil fuels, gas stoves, gas-run cars, and the like, and replace these with renewable forms of energy. But do electric cars work in freezing conditions? Do windmills suffice to meet modern needs for energy? And perhaps most importantly, is global warming, often called climate change, the problem that it is made out to be? Steve Gorham is the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. He's the author of 4 books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development, with over 100,000 copies in print. Steve's new book is called Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. It was recently a number one best-selling book in Amazon's energy policy category. This is Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Steve Gorham welcomes on the program. We welcome Steve Gorham actually back to the program. Steve, thanks so much for joining us again. We appreciate it.
Hey, Jerry. Great to join you.
Sure. Let's begin with the premise itself. So many decisions are being made. Oh, we got to cut down the Keystone Pipeline. Oh, we got to, you know, not have drilling going on in America. We'll import oil from Venezuela and Russia and other places, you know, the Middle East, you know, which is trying to kill us. Anyway, all of this is done because of the premise that there is catastrophic man-made global warming or climate change. Is the premise even correct? Your thoughts as a scientist?
Well, that's correct. First off, I probably should say I'm not a scientist. I'm a researcher and a communicator, and I stand on shoulders of other scientists. But we're in the midst of climatism, if you will. Climatism is an ideology, the fear of man-made warming. And it can't really be imposed upon people are not really going to accept it unless they are coerced to do the things that they need to do. It's sort of interesting. Just this last week, a petition in the state of Michigan has been approved to repeal a November law. In November, the Democrats in Michigan passed legislation that gave the state power to approve wind and solar projects over local resident objections, because most of the locals are opposing wind and solar in Michigan. And so the state says, well, we're just going to overrule them. And now they're putting together a bill which is going to go on the ballot next fall to remove that legislation in Michigan. But we have many, many examples, everything from efforts to get rid of gasoline vehicles, to get rid of gas stoves, force people to buy heat pumps, and many, many other things that are coming from state and federal governments, all in the name of trying to stop carbon dioxide emissions and trying to stop global warming.
And is it even a goal that's worthy of, you know, trying to accomplish?
Well, it isn't. If you look at the information and my first two books, Climatism and the Madman, Mad World of Climatism, were about that subject. If you look at the science, there's a couple things you learn. First, we've had a lot of headlines this last year. We had a scientist publish a paper in July that claimed that July of 2023 was the hottest month in 100,000 years. Well, that was flat out wrong. And it really wasn't challenged much in the media. But there's a lot of evidence that says that today's times are not really very warm. We've had about 1 degree Celsius of warming since 1880. And that date is about when thermometers started to be used. But we've had many times in the last 10,000 years when it was warmer than today. And these were century-long periods in the last 10,000 years. And just to give you an example, there's a glacier next to Juneau, Alaska, southeast Alaska, called the Mendenhall Glacier. And For a number of years, environmental groups are putting up pictures in airports showing that the Mendenhall had shrunk in the last 100 years. And the conclusion, of course, was that humans were causing the glacier to shrink. But about 10 years ago, scientists went down into ice caves inside and underneath the Mendenhall Glacier. And what they found was pretty interesting. They found tree stumps still in the ground. And there were many and many of these, some up to a foot in diameter. And they radiocarbon dated these tree stumps, and they found they were 1,000 years old. They grew during the medieval warm period 1,000 years ago. So the evidence shows that today, where we have a glacier, 1,000 years ago, we had the forest, a forest. And this is just one of many, many pieces of evidence that it has been naturally warmer in past times than it is today. Yet we have the media, all sorts of political leaders and scientists. The United Nations called it that we've entered the era of global boiling. very, very foolish. And so it's unfortunate, but this is all going to break down at some point.
Right now, Steve, we'll switch in our recording to get better reception. But here's the bottom line. A lot of people are pushing these electric cars, but they're not doing so well in cold temperatures. We're recording this in January 2024. There have been a lot of reports of electric cars failing up in the freezing north in America.
Yes, that's the case, Jerry. Electric cars don't work very well in cold weather. And they lose about 20% of their range down at about 30 degrees Fahrenheit, and then that continues to fall. And at about 10 degrees Fahrenheit, you literally cannot charge these electric batteries outside. You have to be inside a heated environment. And so we had a bit of a disaster throughout the Midwest this last week. In Chicago, we had people at Tesla stations pushing dead electric vehicles around. And the charging is very slow. Even if you get one to charge, you're talking 45 minutes to an hour sitting there at the charger. And by the way, you can't run your car heater if you're there at the charger. So it really is a kind of an ugly experience. You know, the crazy thing too now is that Canada is proposing mandates. They want a zero emissions vehicle mandates by 2035, and that would mean electric. And so that's going to be crazy up in Canada from December through February. Unless you heat your garage, you're not going to be able to drive your electric vehicle. But all of this is based on the idea that if we all drive electric vehicles, we can stop the oceans from rising. We can halt man-made global warming. And there really isn't any solid evidence that that is the case.
And they are actually curtailing, you know, gas-run cars, correct? I mean, for example, some places they're trying to make it so you can't even buy new ones so they can ultimately phase out cars that are run by oil, correct?
Yeah, that is the case in California, in Oregon, in Washington, Maryland, New York, Massachusetts. I believe there may be a couple other states that are proposing not to allow any sales of internal combustion engine cars, gasoline primarily, by 2035 or so. We also have the Environmental Protection Agency of the federal government that is not imposing a ban, but what they are doing is they are imposing limitations on carbon dioxide emissions per mile and also mileage in the cars. And they're going to make it basically impossible for any auto manufacturer to produce a line of internal combustion engine cars by 2035 if things aren't changed. The good news is that it appears that there are some places, matter of fact, in Europe right now, they're talking about getting rid of their 2035 mandate. And so we're going to see this system is going to break down. People are not going to stand for this. And we're going to have a mix in the future. Electric vehicles are going to penetrate our auto systems, but I think they're going to be about 20% of the market by 2050, not 70 or 80 or 100%.
Okay. How about a comment on how much of our energy really does come from oil, from gas, and, you know, from the things that they frown on, but the reality is that's where it's coming from. It's not coming from solar panels, and it's not coming from wind turbines.
Well, that is true. There's a lot of headlines about how much wind and solar are doing, but it continues to be very, very small. The world is using about 30 times the amount of energy that we used in about the year 1800, 30 times as much. More than 80% of that is hydrocarbons, coal, oil, and natural gas. But I think it was 81 or 82% a year or two ago, and that was the same as in 1999. And we have only had 1 year in the last 30 years when wind and solar have actually made gains on total world energy use. They've increased their share. That was during a COVID-19 crisis when the world stopped using so much energy, wind and solar gained some. But every other year in history, including last year, the amount of energy consumption has increased more than the amount of wind and solar. And so what we have is they're barely keeping up with the energy consumption, let alone replacing our traditional fuels.
And in the meantime, aren't there some environmental hazards involving, for example, wind power? Aren't there some whales that are somehow being killed because of the patterns, you know, in the wind, not to mention a lot of birds that are killed from wind energy? That's my understanding. I don't know if John Kerry disagrees, but your thoughts?
Well, that is a controversy right now. Off the coast of particularly New Jersey and some other eastern states, we have a lot of whales washing up on shore. And whales use sonar to swim and to exist in their daily lives. But now we have a number of companies off the East Coast that are surveying the bottom using sonar, the bottom of the ocean, to be able to put wind turbines down. And there are some theories that's causing the whales problems, and a lot of them are ending up on shore because they're losing their way and some other things. Now, that is a disputed thing right now. We do have wind turbines. We know that they kill more than 1 million birds a year in the United States, and probably the same number of bats. And, you know, we've got some situations where Scotland, for example, in the last two decades has cut down more than 10 million trees to put up wind turbines. So you got to kind of scratch your head and say, is this really environmentally friendly? But maybe the biggest issue is electric vehicles. They're regarded as environmentally friendly because they emit about half the carbon dioxide over their lifetime of a gasoline car. But they require about six times the special metals that a gasoline car requires. An EV needs lithium and copper and cobalt and manganese and nickel. Almost all of that is in the battery. And the problem with that is mined in many places in developing nations. And mining is going to have, if EVs really take over the world market for cars, mining is going to have to increase by factors of 5 to 10 for all of these metals. And then you have a situation where most of that mining isn't done in the United States. The example I like to use is the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is the biggest producer of cobalt in the world. They produce about 35% of the cobalt ore. And it's well known, it's been known for many years, that they use child labor and they use forced labor to get the cobalt ore out of the hills. And then China is the biggest refiner of special metals in the world. And so they take that ore out of the hills, they ship it to China. And in China, they're not very good with their environmental safeguards as well. And there's a lake in China called Rare Earth Lake, which is polluted by metal tailings. And you can stand in the spot and look in every direction and see this pollution. It's a huge area. But anyway, then that goes into the batteries, and then comes to the United States so that EV drivers can say, wow, aren't I environmentally friendly? But they don't see the social and environmental damage that's occurring in developing nations and in China and around the world.
Okay, SteveGorham.com. Thank you, Steve. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.